I have a pot of emotional energy, or a box, or a bag, or whatever you want to envision it as. I have this set of emotional energy, and I can spend it over on the left. I can spend it on the right. I can spend it up. I can spend it down. I have choices in how I spend it today. But so what I had to do was just what you just said. I had to shift my focus from him to me, and I needed to re-establish myself, and I had to do some real thinking about who am I? Who do I want to be?
Welcome to the Healing Cassandra podcast. We are here to support NT women in neurodiverse relationships. Our goal is to empower you to nurture your health and well-being. I'm your host, Margo Alexis. Today, you're in for a treat. My guests are three women I admire, I'm inspired by, and I'm grateful to call my friends. They are all in long-term neurodiverse marriages, or as I like to call us, the OGs of the NTs. They also bring with them a wealth of experience on how they made their way through the challenges and difficulties that come with a neurodiverse marriage. And I'm excited for them to share that with you today. So let's welcome Barb, Michelle, and Barbara. Welcome, ladies. I'm so happy. I couldn't think of any other guests that I would want to have for my debut podcast of Healing Cassandra.
Let's begin with each one of you telling us how many years you've been married and how far into the marriage were you when you suspected your husband may have ASD? Michelle?
Okay, so I've been with my husband 25 years and married for 23. Because I know what I know now, I probably knew a lot earlier than I realized. But I think probably the last 10 years, it was a more obvious and focused recollection for me that the patterns of behavior were the same. So I wasn't too sure what it meant. And now I do know. But I would say the last 10 years, I knew that it was something that I needed to find out what.
Good. Yeah. How about you, Barb?
So my husband and I have been married 30 years, and it's probably been only in the last 2.5 to 3 years where, looking back, I realized there were certain patterns and probably from the beginning. Even when we were just dating and engaged and what the dynamics were and why things didn't work the way I was, hoping they would. Or anyway, so a couple years ago, it was brought to my attention that just the possibility of some of this and a lot of puzzle pieces kind of started fitting together. And it just made a little more sense of different dynamics and stuff that we'd been dealing with. So.
Yeah, that's interesting because it was the same for me. I'm in a 26-year marriage. We've been together over 28 years, but it was just in the last 4 years. I knew that something was not right. I just couldn't figure it out. Like you said, the puzzle pieces. And then, all of a sudden it all came clear and it was just like an aha moment where, you're all the years pass in front of you and you say, oh my gosh, this is why this fits now. So I can definitely relate to that. How about you, Barbara?
Yeah. So we've been married for 16 years and we were together for 5 years before that. So you would have thought I might've noticed some of these things. What I noticed were things were a little off the beam, but I always had excuses for them. I always made up, reasons for them. But I can tell you about 10 years into the relationship, I thought, oh, maybe he's on the spectrum, maybe. And so I started to buy a few books and I did a little bit of reading. And then I convinced myself, nah, that's not quite it. Because he's just not as bad as all those people. You wouldn't meet him on the street and say, oh, yeah, he's on the spectrum. And so I went away from that idea. And I decided, well, maybe it's me. And I needed to learn to be more patient, more kind, and more tolerant. And I began all kind of self-work. But about 2 years ago, it began to resurface for me. And that was when I changed jobs and I had a little more free time. And maybe that was it. I wasn't always distracted with working all the time and all my outside activities. So I had a little more space to really notice that this is off the beam and it isn't all me. And so I began that investigation again and very quickly ran across enough information for me to say, oh, this has got to be what I'm dealing with. So there were lots of little red flags. I just didn't tumble to them. I just couldn't put, as we've used the word a few times already today, the puzzle pieces together.
Yes. And the interesting thing is we know that something is challenging and something's wrong in the relationship, but you know, many times or most times the family members and our friends, they don't see it. So that's what makes it extra, you know, for us that we're struggling on our day-to-day, every day. And we feel alone because other people say, well, I don't see that. Or, you know, they don't know what we're talking about because they're not in the communication on a day-to-day basis. They just see them maybe for a few hours and they may talk surface things, but they don't see, you know, the challenges that go along with it. I'd like to talk about, you know, what, you know, has been your biggest struggle. I know for me, like there's been many struggles, but one of them I've felt in the relationship is that, you know, I really lost my identity. I felt for many years that I was just on autopilot, especially when we were raising our son. I felt like I was a single parent. I think that was the time that I really struggled the most because I felt like I just had to be on autopilot to get things done with the least amount of conflict. And in doing that, you just lose yourself. And, you know, I felt like I was this vibrant woman interested in the arts and creative and all that just kind of went away. And I think, you know, you wake up, I know I woke up and I just said, you know, what happened to me? I just have no clue of who I am and that person that I used to be. So for me, what I did was, you know, I had to, you know, begin the work. Like you said, Barb, you do the personal work. And one of them was I had to really figure out, like, what do I value anymore? What are my values? And what is important to me? Not important to my children, not important to my husband, but what, you know, what is it that I, you know, truly value? And once I, you know, that was like the base or the foundation of finding out what I truly valued in life that, you know, kind of set the path for me getting back to myself and finding my identity. And I do want to say that if you go on the Healing Cassandra website, there is a worksheet that you can download on that can help you with that if anyone's interested in that. But Michelle, do you want to share maybe, you know, what was one of your struggles or something you still continue to struggle with and that you're working on and finding tools in that to overcome?
Yes, I think for me, the biggest struggle was communication because so often when I try to communicate in a very typical husband-wife way, it was downloaded as being argumentative. And I went through a period where I didn't try to communicate anymore. And the isolation of not being able to express yourself, not being understood, validated, that definitely has a huge effect on you. And when I was outside of our situation in a workplace or with friends or just in general public, communication was very different. And I was heard and I did have an opinion and people did want to hear me. So that was the part that I definitely struggled with because it was my only tool to try and connect with another human being that I knew. Yet it felt that was taken away from me. So that I found definitely the most challenging. And like Barbara, I did start reading things, listening to other people. like-minded women couples that were similar to myself and my husband, and then started to realize there's a whole world out there of people like me. And only from that period, I was able to continue communicating, but starting to learn that it had to be different.
You are so right, Michelle, when you said that there are a whole world of women out there who are just like us. And that's very comforting to know that. How about you, Barb?
Probably one of my biggest things that really ended up kind of accumulating and hitting me pretty hard, maybe 12 years ago or so. And then there was a few year period where I thought I was losing my mind because, and I just looking back, realizing, you know, just exhausted from the overcompensating of several things, not only just, you know, in our marriage relationship, but especially raising kids and how much, you know, I just figured, like Barbara was saying too, you know, if I just try harder and do things different, if I am, you know, nicer, if I come, you know, approach things and say them differently, you know, maybe this will help in the midst of kind of helping my husband, you know, with what a lot of times, I mean, is an anxiety and a lot of that he deals with. I totally took charge of anything outside of his job. I decided that was totally going to be my area, which, you know, on the one hand, that's great. But when it gets to be just an overwhelming thing where you kind of lose yourself in that, yeah, it ended up kind of biting me. So still kind of learning how to, be my own self, not take on everybody else's things. I felt like I was, especially in emotions and stuff, trying to manage my own, my husband's, my kids. And then also along with that too, trying to, not knowing what was going on in the family dynamics, I kept trying to protect my kids, I guess. And then also when they're younger, you know, I'm not going to go discuss everything with them either. So it was a pretty lonely time in that. Yeah, just I think overcompensating is the word that and the idea that kind of got me into trouble.
Yeah, overcompensating, I think that's a big thing. I know I have felt that I had to be both, you know, the mother, the father, the, you know, take care of everything, the, you know, superwoman, and just for many years, just letting them, you know, off the hook and taking it all on. And then that's where it's exhausting. And I know for me, I would get sick and run down and bitter and resentful and, you know, all those negative things, because you feel like that if you're not going to do it, it's not going to get done. And, you know, you want your family to be a family and you have this vision of, you know, it being a certain way. And when it's up to you to create that, after a while, it's like, gee, I'd like some give and take, or I'd like some reciprocity here. How about you, Barbara?
Oh, I can so relate to everything you all have said already. I look back and I would look back at myself and I'd say, what happened to this vibrant, vital woman? You know, this woman that was passionate about life and had a lot of joy going on. And I found myself isolated from my friends, isolated from my family. I heard one of you say lonely, you know, I realized how lonely I was, even though I interacted with people at work and things, there was a feeling of loneliness and disconnectedness. And that eventually led to some depression. And I had to deal with some of that, but I was still not sure what all of this stuff was. And it built into a level of resentment. And I got to where I didn't like him anymore. Forget love. I didn't like him anymore. You know, I cared and respected, and I'd say I'd love him, but I just didn't like him anymore. That all of that was such a major, major struggle for me. And today the struggle is rebuilding, you know, rebuilding some moments of fondness towards him. You know, letting go, sanding down those edges of resentment, So that's where I'm living right now, in that rebuilding phase. And it's a journey.
What are some of the things, and this is what I admire about all of you ladies, because even though we are in these difficult relationships, all of you have made a commitment to yourself, you know, to do the work, to begin the journey to heal yourself, and to shift the focus that from him, okay, maybe will he get counseling, you know, will he get evaluated, and it's always on him, but to survive and to endure these long-term marriages and that, I see each one of you have shifted the focus, you know, to yourself. And one of the things that I like that Barbara, you've mentioned before, is about, you know, our emotional energy. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah, Margot, when I realized this, that this idea of ascertaining my emotional energy and making decisions about what I did with it, when I recognized that concept, it was a real game changer for me. Because what I understand today is I have a pot of emotional energy, or a box, or a bag, or whatever you want to envision it as. I have this set of emotional energy, and I can spend it over on the left, I can spend it on the right, I can spend it up, I can spend it down. I have choices in how I spend it today. But so what I had to do was just what you'd said. I had to shift my focus from him to me, and I needed to re-establish myself. And I had to do some real thinking about who am I? You know, who do I want to be? And, you know, I've done that. I've done it in all kinds of ways. I've picked up gardening again. I've joined a gardening group. I've joined a women that like to go camping. And I got myself a little bitty travel trailer that I can pull all by myself. And I've begun to think of things that reestablish me as an individual. That doesn't mean that I'm not in this marriage, or I've given up on the marriage, or anything. But it's just like that old saying about, you got to put your own oxygen mask on first before you can help the child sitting next to you. And that's what I realized was true for me. I've got to put on my own oxygen mask first. I've got to reestablish my own identity through healthy work that I do. You know, my career and hobbies and friends, and I have to be not afraid to do those things. And that's not exactly true. I get to be afraid all I want, but I just need to have courage to do them anyway. And that's exactly what happens for me. I'm scared lots of times when I'm doing these things I haven't done in a long time or ever done, but I do them anyway, because I think that's what courage really is.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. And I always talk about it as, you know, I had to learn how to self-partner, you know, that if I was going to be in this marriage, and I was choosing to stay in this marriage, believe me, there was times that I thought many times about leaving the marriage and did separate for a while. So, you know, being married this long, it's been all kinds of phases that we go through. But once I realized that, you know, self-partnering, and like I said, getting back to what I value, and having the courage and setting the boundaries to put myself first, that self-care was important, find out what I liked again and how I was going to learn to come back to me and have a fulfilling life despite everything going on around me. That was a defining moment. How about you, Michelle?
Yes, I'm just listening to you ladies talking, and I definitely relate to 100% of what you're saying. I think for me, it was much more of a slow burn, because intellectually I knew that I had to make a path for myself and do the self-care and the self-partnering and do things that brought me joy. I just found it a struggle to focus on myself. Certainly in the beginning, if we take this last year, the beginning of this year, I found that quite challenging, because I expected, by doing certain things, doing therapy, doing a couples group, joining a group with ladies that are in similar situations, that would kind of fix it and I would be on the path to recovery. But it's a lot of ebb and flow in the situation. And now looking back, that helped me to build up the resilience for myself so that I could continue with what I was focused on doing, which was taking care of myself. But now it's definitely a lot easier for me to move away from a situation that wasn't good for me. And I'm very committed to my marriage. But as we know, there's times that it just draws you in negatively and it's not good for you. You know, our husbands have to take care of certain things themselves. It doesn't mean that we have to also go down that rabbit hole. So it definitely was a slow burn for me, but I think, you know, if I had my time over, I wouldn't change it, because the skills that I've learned feel solid and it's definitely given me inspiration and resilience to continue or to stand away when things are not okay and not get caught up in that. So I think, yeah, you know, for some women, you can move over into those situations of self-care quite quickly. But for me, it just took a little bit longer. But I definitely value it now because it's a natural part of my life now.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of things that you said there that hit home. The first one is, you know, self-care. That's such a word, you know, people think, oh, let's just go get your nails done and get your hair done. And certainly that's part of it. But I think for NT women in neurodiverse relationships, it goes deeper. It's not just like a luxury. I think it's a must for our healing. I think and it's a process. It doesn't happen overnight. And I know it can be difficult because we look at it as, oh, I'm being selfish, or, you know, just to keep doing things for myself. I'm putting myself first. I have so many other things to do. But I just think it's vital for us to, you know, whatever self-care looks like for you. Barbara, it's gardening and, you know, her travel trailer. And I know for Barb, it's playing the piano so beautifully. Can you talk a little bit about that, your journey back to using your creativity with the piano and how much joy that brings to you and to us, because we get to hear you.
Yeah, that's been really fun the past year to start into taking some piano lessons. And I love the distraction of it. And, you know, I just get away to there and I can totally think on that and focus on that. And yeah, that's been a real help this last year. I think my husband knows that I play. I don't know. Always kind of a thought in my mind, but anyway, thankful that, you know, there's you guys to listen to it and people in the piano group. It's been, yeah, super encouraging this past year. Yeah. As we're talking to, like, you know, our emotional tanks and deciding where to spend those. It made me think too, you know, how often, because I've certainly enjoyed that getaway of, you know, learning more piano and performing and just the joy of that. But also in the midst of that too, you know, I still have kids at home that I'm raising. And so sometimes I think I still fight this thing in my head that thinks, you know, when things are good, they're always going to be good, right? And when things are bad, then they're always, you know, so kind of trying to settle my mind down and realize that, you know, like Michelle was saying, just there's such an ebb and flow of things. And I think it's been helpful for me to, you know, in that self-care too, to just realize there's, you know, there's moments of that, which sometimes, yeah, maybe not even something that I'm doing or doing something special, but just kind of taking a minute to take a breath and remember I'm not in charge of the universe here, you know, because I, like I was saying, put so much pressure on myself for so many years to be both parents and to keep everything happy chappy at home. And it's helped me to, you know, realize, and it's hard still to accept that there's going to be times that are just really lousy still, but it's been so helpful too, to have this group, especially, and just, you know, those times are, they're still there, but now to have the support of people who understand. And I was thinking too, along the lines of, you know, just our emotional tanks and how much we process grief at times, and loss anyway. And so I think it's been helpful to me in the past year too, to take some time to reframe a lot of things and again, remind myself, I'm not in charge of everything. At the same time, there's a whole lot I can do, you know, and to remind myself, like when we meet, I feel my strongest version of me when we hang up the call, you know, and I'm ready to go like tackle something or try something different, you know, whether improving some communication or, I don't know. I go away with such a healthier outlook on things. So
that's great, Barb. And you bring up so much about the tank, you know, our tanks get empty. And I think I said to you one time, Barb, if you're driving and your gas tank is on empty, you have to fill it up or else you're going to be on the side of the road, you know, waving someone down to help you. So, you know, that's the same in our lives. Our tanks get empty. So, you know, we need to do the self-care or wave someone down, get support and that to fill up our tanks again. And as much as we would love to rely on our husbands to do that, they're not always going to, you know, not going to be there in the way that our expectations sometimes are for, you know, that we want them to be there. So filling up our tanks and discovering what that is for each of us, because it's a personal thing. For me, I love to art journal. And that's the way that I process through things is through art journaling. That's, you know, a great, great escape for me. You know, I think it's important for each one of us to find out what that is and to do those things for ourselves, despite what's going on in our lives, because that's what's going to give us energy to keep going in our relationships, and we'll be better for it. Like Barbara said at the beginning of the call, put the oxygen mask on first, and then we can be stronger, more clear-minded to handle the difficulties that come along the way. Michelle, you mentioned talking about the rabbit hole, and we talk about the infamous rabbit hole that, you know, sometimes things are going well, and then before you know it, you're just down in that rabbit hole. Like Barbara, you mentioned, you know, depression, and then you say, geez, how did I get here? It's just awful. And, you know, how am I feel so lonely, isolated, and how am I going to, you know, scratch my way back up to the surface? I think I can say we've all, you know, all been there, and it's a terrible place to be. What are some things that you've implemented that are maybe stopgaps to say, you know what, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, or I should say like signs before you get to that point that you can take a look at so you don't go that far down? Michelle?
I think for me, it's definitely, you know, educating myself about what I was dealing with when I knew what I was dealing with. But I have a huge impact from groups of women and friends like yourselves when we are sharing information. So like Barb was saying earlier, when we come away from our get together, that has got more impact on me to reflect back in the week following. If something does go wrong, then I think about the conversations that we've had, and I think about the different tools we've spoken about and things that works for each other and the words of wisdom that comes from one of us that might be in a stronger place. So for me, I definitely reflected on that. And as time goes past, it becomes more of second nature. So when you're in a situation that potentially could be explosive, or you could be labeling it as gaslighting, or all of the terminologies that we've learned about, I was able to stand back, reflect on not getting caught up in it, and focus on something like being grateful for something else in my life. And just focusing on a positive, that gave me a sense of joy, and that started making me feel more empowered. And then using that pattern and the repetition through events, it does make you feel stronger and you do feel empowered. And that takes you a little longer or further down the road. Obviously, we do have bumps in the road, but when they do come, I certainly feel more empowered to digress and not go head on into the bump and take care of myself better. So I think it's learning from each other and using those tools and not expecting too much from yourself, because it's not a quick fix, and recognizing that the patterns of behavior is not initiated by us sometimes, but how we react to it is something that I started taking more control of. And yeah, that's been empowering.
That's a great point, is how we react to it. Barbara, do you want to share maybe a tool or something that you've put in place that in regards to like maybe how you react differently now to your husband that has helped you?
So when I think I'm going down a rabbit hole, I often think of HALT, and means hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. And so that's the first thing I always do, is I check in with myself to see about those HALT words. Am I hungry? Am I angry about something or resentful? You know, am I lonely? Am I tired? And those are the things, like Michelle said, those are things I can do something about. I mean, it may sound silly to think I'm thinking about being hungry, but you know, if I need to eat healthy, I need to eat, you know, well, not always healthy, but you know, I need to eat on schedule. I need to have a good sleep schedule. I need the foundations of being, you know, healthy in place, because I can't expect to react to things in a healthy way if I'm not, you know, we're back to self-care again, aren't we? If I'm not taking care of myself, so that when something comes up in my relationship that just feels very uncomfortable, just doesn't seem right. Instead of going right to anger and right to resentment, I take a look at those four things. If those, once I get those cured, if there's something wrong with those, then I look at, you know, could this be part of being a neurotypical or a neurodiverse couple, or me being neurotypical and him being neurodiverse? And sometimes I can identify that and say, okay, this could be that. So what other communication could I have? Could I write it down? You know, his auditory processing skills may not be strong, so maybe I need to write it down. Maybe I need to pay attention to the timing. So when he walks in the door after work, that's not the time to ask about vacation plans. So, you know, some of those kinds of strategies have been helpful to me, Margo.
I'm going to speak to what Michelle said, you know, because I don't want the audience to think like, woohoo, we have this all handled. Our marriage is weak. You know, no. Come on, ladies, get on board. We're gonna take you to heaven. It's not like that. I mean, I still struggle on a daily basis, and I still am working to learn new skills to work on not only myself, but my communication with my husband. And it is a process. It's a process, and it takes practice. I make them up something and I'll say, okay, well, I'm going to practice it. And then also I find, like with my husband and with, you know, the ASD mind, they like the repetition. So if I approach something in a certain way and then keep doing that with him, you know, eventually that becomes what he comes to expect. You know, for example, one of the things that I've really been working on this year is detachment. You know, so when my husband has a meltdown, I used to go back and want to be right. And then it would escalate. He would say something, then I would say something, and it wasn't productive. And then that's when I would fall into the rabbit hole. I would walk away, you know, depressed and angry and bitter, and he wouldn't remember the conversation, frankly. So one of the things that I've been working on is the detachment. So if my husband starts to have a meltdown, and this may not work for everyone, but for me, it seems to work. I just get quiet and I just say in its tone of voice, well, enough of this, you know, had enough of this. And I walk out of the room. And so now he's used to that. So he's left to himself, and I remove myself from, you know, the situation. So that's something that I've been working on. It's just learning to detach from certain communications and situations, because it's not worth it for my health, for my well-being, to take the bait, to, you know, get involved into a conversation that's not productive?
I think something that I've, a little phrase that I've used to help me was that I need to offload, to reload my energy tank. So, and learning to offload was a process. So that is sharing with other people, because you become so isolated and you do go through a process of feeling insecure and doubting yourself. So just being able to share what you were feeling and get the validation from like-minded couples and women, it is empowering. And that gave me the energy to take on board the tools that you do learn, and then move it forward again. So I do often reflect on offload to reload. And I think because of the nature of our relationships, it's you do tend to isolate yourself, and certain aspects can be, you can feel embarrassed to share that you've got these issues all the time. So you do keep so much within yourself. And obviously that is not a good way to look after yourself, because the depression and all the other things that we've spoken about, we've all had experiences of that. So just letting things go and moving away from it so that you can fill yourself up with positive things and things that bring you joy.
Let's talk a little bit about grief, because that's been brought up in this conversation. And I know grief and loss is a big part of being in a neurodiverse relationship. We entered into these marriages and with, you know, a picture of what that was going to be like, with high hopes of what that was going to be. And it didn't turn out that way. And there's something to grieve there. There is a loss. And I'm 26 years into it. And, you know, there's still parts of it that I do grieve. I, you know, it's not like other losses that I've had in my life of a loved one where you just go through all of the grieving stages and then come to acceptance. I've come to acceptance on certain things in my marriage. And there's certain things that I haven't, that I'm still at a different stage. Some of them anger, some of, you know, and I, so it's kind of like divided for me. I don't look at it as, oh, I've grieved this entire marriage. I don't feel that way. I think I've grieved aspects of the marriage. I've come to acceptance on many, many parts of the marriage, but I don't know if it will ever, I'll stand up and say, oh, I've grieved this entire thing and, you know, it's all good. How about any of you ladies?
You know, I mean, I think I can definitely relate to the process of grieving and also accepting that things, if they're okay now, they're not always going to be okay, but that's okay because I can separate from it. Whereas before, it really was just a roller coaster and you couldn't detach from it. So I expect that there will always be bumps in the road, and I'm learning to always have my toolbox handy that I can dip into when I need. So the effect that it used to have on me, I don't really have that as much anymore, because I know when I need to jump off that bus. And that is a good thing, because the more I'm aware of it, the more I can apply it. I think just knowing that, no, just because it's okay now, it's a false sense of security to think we are on, you know, the road to recovery, because it's accepting that this is my life and this is a different life that I had anticipated. And that acceptance comes gradually. It's not, as you say, Margot, it is a process. And just to find the joy in being in the same space as your spouse, as your husband, and find things that you used to have that brought you joy. And for a long time, for many of us, that was a foreign thing. But finding yourself, who you are, the person that you feel you've lost along the way. And when that person starts to come out of the shadows and you meet other women that inspire you and you've learned some things along the way, you can apply them when things get tricky. But that doesn't mean there's not going to be bumps in the road. But at least now we expect it and I think we're better equipped for it.
Exactly. How about you, Barb? Do you have any thoughts on grief and loss? You've been married for 30 years.
30 years, yeah. I think it's helped me, kind of like I mentioned before, but being a little more realistic in, you know, and like Michelle's saying too, it's like this doesn't just go away, you know, one time and we've arrived and we've worked through grief and, you know, because things keep coming back. And so I think for me to accept that reality, which is just kind of life, right? Like there's loss and there's difficult times, but thinking too that I probably better like either have these things written down to remind myself sometimes, or be sure to, you know, remind myself or have good friends around me that remind me of the times that you do get through, you know, that because we will have little seasons of all kinds of grief, you know, not just within our relationships here, but and so which then is encouraging to know like, oh, back then when that was such and such was, you know, a very difficult time, to look back and realize we made it through that. So I keep thinking, you know, we talk often too among us about doing the next right thing. And I think that's huge too in pulling out of grief. To just be moving forward because it's so easy to get stuck there, you know. I've got a rainy day here today and it's been sunny for so long, you know, and it's easy for me to even just look at the rain today and think, oh, there we go. Everything's lost. It'll never be sunny again. But anyway, I think those reminders that no, it gets sunny. So it's just difficult. And yeah.
Barbara, that's your phrase that you say to us all the time. Do you want to talk about that? Do the next right thing.
It's a meaningful phrase to me because it simplifies everything that I like to complicate. And it just says, do the next right thing and let the results go. And I can trust that if I just put one foot in front of the other going in the right direction, I will get where I want to go. And maybe it's slower than I want it to be, but I get there. So yeah, do the next right thing. Chunk it down to little chunks. What's the next right thing? Sometimes it's just as simple as, all right, look up the phone number, write it down on a piece of paper. It can be something that small, but do the next right thing because that helps me from being overwhelmed. And that was, you know, certainly one of my problems along the way was sometimes I would get overwhelmed and couldn't find the next, I just couldn't move forward. I couldn't get headed in the right direction. I knew where I wanted to go, but I couldn't seem to get things initiated. So chunking it down, doing the next right thing. Yeah.
I love that, Barbara. When I look at the three of you, we've all been in long-time marriages, but each of you are in different stages of your lives. Barb, you have six kids. You still have many of them at home. And Michelle, you're in transition now. Your children are off to university, so that's going to bring a life change. And Miss Barbara, you're an empty nester. So it's you've been with you and your husband for quite a while. I'd like each of you to share, you know, where you're at now and, you know, maybe how it's changed as you've transitioned into a new stage. I know Barb having six kids, when I look at my relationship, I think that was the most difficult time was raising the children. You know, do you want to speak to that? Because I admire you so much. You have your hands full.
Yeah, it's been crazy making at times. and still even, you know, they're not little anymore, which in a way is easier. I don't know. Maybe that might have been easier. Now at this point, now I feel like I'm playing psychologist and, you know, with all of them and not doing a very good job most of the time. But I think what's really been difficult in feeling like I was a single parent, but I could never quite convince myself of it even because, you know, physically we are in a two-parent home. And so that's been really hard. It's not until recently, and I've not arrived at, you know, some great point by any means. But I am definitely trying to, I like the word that you used before, Margo, about practicing, you know, I think it's good to keep in mind that we just practice things. I don't think we'll ever arrive at, you know, what we would really love to be at, but I'm trying to remind myself and practice being in that role and accepting that, you know, it doesn't look like I'm in a single parent role, but I know that I am. My experience shows me that I am. My kids have even said that I am. So, but anyway, and then using that rather than, oh, poor me, this is really overwhelming and this is so difficult. It's like, well, I mean, what can I do? Also reasonably keeping in mind, it's not ideal. I mean, so it's tricky to do that. But anyway, I guess it's kind of been a mindset of, and I keep getting back to this, but new sheriff in town, you know, which doesn't mean I come in all guns blazing and, you know, we're gonna do this different now. But in my mind, it gives me a little bit of encouragement, you know, to, okay, if this is my role and I am kind of legitimately single parenting, then what am I going to do about it? What's my next right thing to do? As I feel like I have plates spinning all over and they're sometimes crashing to the floor. And oh, well, we just pick them up. And anyway.
And remembering to not be hard on yourself, that you're a great mother and, you know, you're doing the best you can. Your children love you. And sometimes we tend to guilt ourselves and beat ourselves up. And, you know, that's all wasted energy. And I love, you know, what you said that, you know, you're the sheriff in town and you're just going to take it on and you're going to do it. And you have to be there for your children. And they know, and they, you know, they love you and they respect you. And Michelle, now you're entering the transition and the phase where your children are grown now and they're heading off to university. And it's going to be a time in your life where it's just you and your husband. How you feeling about that, sister?
Well, I was hoping I could fit into the suitcase and go to university with them. But hey ho, here we are. So this is definitely a different time, like you know, you ladies have mentioned, we've for a range of reasons, we've self-parented or, you know, single-parented, although we were in a two-parent relationships. So the children have, they're young people. Now, my daughter's in her third year of university, and I just said goodbye to her just before we got on this call. So she's on the road back to where she needs to be. And my son has left a week ago to start his first year of university. And through the 20 odd years of us being together, my husband has always traveled extensively. We have to get used to the fact that it's just two of us. So my toolbox is loaded and I am ready to go. Yeah, it's definitely going a different journey, but I am so grateful for the work I have put in this last year and the support that I've gotten. And I don't mean to say this, but it's given me the ammunition. I don't want to sound aggressive when I say that, but it's just a word that came to mind. I have the ammunition and the tools to better help myself on my journey as I continue to work things out.
That's excellent. And we'll be anxious to hear how, you know, how it goes along the way, but I have complete confidence in you. So, And Barbara, so you've been, it's just been you and your husband for a long time now.
You know, this, the stage of life that I'm in, where it is just the two of us, is a great part of life. And in looking back, I did the math, and really only about 20% of my life was spent raising children. There was a whole other 80% of my life. Now, 20% of that was being a child or a young person, and another 20% was raising, you know, children. And now there's this whole other big piece of life that is not about raising children. And so I would say to my colleagues and friends that have children they're still working with, there's hope. There's more life after children. And we love our children and we loved our time with them, but there's a whole nother life out here. And that's the part that I'm getting to rediscover and to enjoy, Margo. Yeah.
Final question. You know, many of our ladies that are listening out there, you know, they may be feeling a little bit lost and hopeless and, you know, run down from the weight of their relationship. What piece of advice would you give them?
How about if I jump in there first?
Perfect.
This is Barbara. There are so many things that we've talked about today that I think are pieces of advice that I would give. You know, taking care of ourselves, that self-partnering, rebuilding our own life. But one of the things we haven't talked about is taking care of our financial health. And so one of the things that I needed to do was to take a look at that and was to, you know, set up my own checking account. That doesn't mean that we don't have joint accounts, but I needed my own checking account where I could begin to set aside a little bit of money so I felt financially secure. I needed to, especially in my part of life where I am heading towards retirement, I needed to be sure our retirement for funds were okay. So I needed help from the outside to get some financial planning underway. So those were some of the things I was thinking about when we talked about self-care earlier, is let's not leave out that financial health. That would be one of my pieces of advice for people, is it's okay to focus on that.
That's an excellent piece of advice and a very important one, that I think when we focus on our finances and that it can empower us as well.
Just a last thought, maybe even for people that haven't been working or outside the home for a while, or have been working and they're not happy with their jobs, it's an opportunity to do some investigation of something new, to try a new job or going back to a job that you haven't had in a while. So getting out and doing something new.
Good. And Barb?
Take a breath. Give it a little, you know, beat and before moving on. But another thing, yesterday, you know, I was kind of joking around about being interested in pursuing, like practicing being an adult. Because of course I'm a full-fledged adult by age, but you know, so many times when things are overwhelming and I just feel like I'm a scared little child a lot. So anyway, key words today for me are practicing and yeah, I'm trying to keep in mind. So what would an adult do in this situation? What's my best adult move?
How about Michelle?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Doing some more things for yourself and making sure that you are more in control of your overall life now that you have found yourself again, once you've gone and done the work, understood what it is you're dealing with, gotten the tools to help yourself. Definitely that you can be self-sufficient, because for so many of us, we are reliant on our spouses, particularly, you know, from a financial point of view, like Barbara was saying. And, you know, that can just exacerbate the journey that you are on, particularly if you've got younger children. So continue to reach out to empower yourself, to find the tools that you can be self-sufficient and you can be independent. I certainly, for me, my children, as I say, are grown, but that was a huge challenge when they were younger. and the pressure and the stress of knowing that everything that you relied on was invested in the one person. And if it is a volatile situation, it can be very overwhelming. And many of us have been in that situation. So just continue to find yourself and to empower yourself as best you can. Don't expect to climb the mountain in a month. But just being aware of it, I think, is helpful to taking those little steps every day and every week and keep building on it.
Exactly. Thank you, Michelle, for that. That's very good words of advice. And I want to thank you, ladies, for spending the hour with me. And I know our listeners will really enjoy hearing, you know, what you've had to say. And if you want more information, head over to healingcassandra.com and subscribe. It will keep you up to date on future events and podcasts. And you'll also be sent bundles of healing joy. So thank you again, ladies.